One organization unites local forces in attracting individuals and families and their dollars to the Crescent City. Here is their leader, Mark Romig. Welcome to WWNO Radio once again.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, we've had you up here before, right?
Yes, and it's my alma mater, University of New Orleans, so it's always great to be back on the campus.
Well, that will finish the interview. You have too good a radio voice, and you'll be after my job in about 5 minutes. Yeah, you do. You sound good.
Blame it on my father. Well, he's got a great voice. You know, he's been doing the Saints announcing for 43 years in the stadium. So he's had a lot of practice.
You have a rather well-known, prominent family here, as a matter of fact.
Well, my sister, Mary Beth, is the fastest one of the family. She runs a lot. she's a terrific family member, as all of my brothers and sisters are. And my brother Jay works with the New Orleans Saints. And so we're far and far and wide, as they say.
You're providing a lot of services to our city.
Yeah.
Indeed. We're going to talk about your services as, and I don't know whether this is exactly the title, Chief Executive Officer of the New Orleans Tourism Marketing Corporation.
Chief Concierge, I like to.
Chief Concierge. You tell people where to go.
That's right. In a nice way.
That's okay. We can edit out all the other stuff. Let's talk about your organization. Let's talk about NOTMC a little bit. Tell us about your makeup, your function, and your programs, Mark, please.
The New Orleans Tourism Marketing Corporation is the city's official leisure tourism destination promotion agency, formed in the very early 1990s to really help the city promote itself during what then were known as the slow times of the year, the summer months, and sometimes some of the months in the winter. It has morphed over the years to really become the city's branding agency. We're out there discussing New Orleans as a destination for visitors year-round. In effect, we are an economic development agency that promotes the vitality of the city, and we are comprised of a 14-member board of directors currently, and we take our job very seriously to ensure that as this impact occurs of more visitation, that we are also taking care of our assets.
What about hands-on day-to-day operations, folks? Do you do most of that in-house? Do you contract work out?
It's both. We have a member full-time staff. We have two part-timers. We also work with outside advertising and public relations agencies.
You have a distinctive product to sell.
Yes, we do.
You also have challenges. You have competition and you've got summer weather. Right. Let's talk about the immediate future for NOTMC. What are you doing?
Well, this summer, again, this is our core messaging period. So we are out there as of mid-April around the nation with an advertising campaign that utilizes a mixture of both traditional media. Our base market that we're attracting here are the age of 35 to 54, and we bring messages to them that we believe help incite them to go to our website and find information about the city. We've got so many activities in the summer to talk through and about, working with our partner at the Convention and Visitors Bureau, who are attracting associations and groups to the city, and they're doing a very good job this summer with the number of conventions coming in June, July, and August.
You've introduced the matter of dealing with both traditional media and with the new digital media platforms. Tell us about your new app, Mark. What about Go NOLA?
Well, Go NOLA is such an exciting product. We've just introduced this visitor app. It is the official tourism app for the city of New Orleans, and it also is an excellent tool for locals. So those friends of ours live in the city of New Orleans, want to find out what's going on in the city from a standpoint of special events, places to eat, places to experience, they can utilize this app as well. It's available on both iPhone and Android, and it is an excellent tool. It puts everything about New Orleans in your hand. It's fed through by our neworleansonline.com, which is our major website. That's where all information about New Orleans resides, and it's updated automatically 24/7. So anything that you want to know about the city of New Orleans, you can find on the app. Plus, there's some really great features to it. One is something that's utilizing augmented reality, and it is a positioning tool that allows you to see what is around you. So you hit what's near me, and all of a sudden what pops up are all the restaurants and attractions in your neighborhood. We also have a number of audio tours done by celebrities. We have tours by John Goodman, by Wendell Pierce, by Patricia Clarkson and Brian Batt. I want to say, too, it was designed by researching the best of the apps around the nation, and we believe that we've designed now what is the standard.
It sounds absolutely state-of-the-art.
We believe it is, and it's user-friendly. It's called Go NOLA, and I think as we've seen the traffic recently, people are sensing that it is a great value. They're seeing it as a way to not only experience New Orleans while they're here, but prior to coming to New Orleans, you can download it and start planning your trip. So when you're here, you've got your trip in your hands.
Mark Romig, who runs the New Orleans Tourism Marketing Corporation, with us here on WWNO. Thanks very much for the work you do for the city and for coming up to see us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's All Things New Orleans for 28th June. You can hear any of our features anytime at our website. Just a quick reminder. And while we're talking about WWNO, I want to, you have by now heard about our program enhancements that we've planned for the 23rd of July. One of the outstanding programs coming to our lineup on that day is the Midday News Magazine Here and Now. It's hosted by Hall of Fame Boston broadcast journalist Robin Young, who recently talked with WWNO's Fred Kasten about her career and about Here and Now.
When you listen to Robin Young on Here and Now, or just talk to her, you quickly discover that she has a wide-ranging curiosity and intelligence and a true flair for the dramatic, which she comes by naturally.
I came from a family that really appreciated the arts. My brother, who was the kid that they paraded around, no class could start in my elementary school till my brother came and sang the national anthem. And he would grow up to be an actor. His name is John Savage. Some people might remember him from The Deer Hunter. He played Michael, the guy who ends up in a wheelchair, a really dramatic role, and he was clawed in Hair. And so this idea of a theater film was really ingrained in us.
Robin Young grew up on Long Island with a big-time reading habit.
I lived in books when I was growing up. I had those sort of like an encyclopedia of stories. They had a textured, almost reddish-brown cover, and inside some of the illustrations were N.C. Wyeth. I don't know if anybody remembers those, but there were these wonderful tales, and so I loved reading those sort of adventure stories. I feel reading is like eating. I mean, it just feels that way to me, and it's a good thing because we plow through, maybe 3-5 books a week.
Young did a combined major of history, philosophy, and English at Ithaca College in upstate New York. Journalism was nowhere on the radar.
It didn't occur to me until years later, and I think that's the experience for probably a lot of people. It sort of just gets revealed to you.
An important chapter in that revelation came soon after college.
I was doing one of those cross-country trips you do when you're young, and I ran out of money, so stopped in Colorado, became a governess, turned on the TV and saw some brand new thing called Sesame Street. I thought, oh, my God, that's what I want to do. I want to teach kids through technology. So I got in the car, drove to Boston, because I thought smart things were in Boston. And I literally drove up to Channel 2 here in Boston. PBS, they make Nova and things like that. And I presented myself as there to work with Jim Henson on Sesame Street. And they said, oh, honey, they make that in New York, where I was from. But that's how I ended up here in Boston.
No Sesame Street for Robin Young, but jobs in broadcasting soon enough, on a Boston FM, spinning the hits overnights on the weekends, and at a commercial TV station.
And it was the station here in Boston that covered the Bruins, the Red Sox. It was kind of the sports station. And I actually became an assistant director. I've directed Red Sox and Bruins games, and was perfectly prepared because I was doing producing and directing and writing for when a little show named Evening Magazine came along. And this became PM magazines across the country, but this was the first 7:30 at night sort of public affairs / entertainment hybrid, and I loved it.
Robin Young did very well in television, with high-profile news anchor jobs, working for NBC on The Today Show, but ultimately began to chafe at some of the medium's editorial limitations.
There's certainly wonderful work being done in television. I'm thinking of Anderson Cooper during the Troubles in New Orleans, you know, taking on public officials on the air. I mean, what an astonishing use of the of broadcasting. But too often, you know, there's not much long-form reporting except for court reenactments, and it's been kind of disappointing, actually. So to be able to be in public radio and to do the range of things that we get to do is, I'm grateful.
That opportunity came when Robin Young joined the Here and Now team, just as the Boston-based program was going national, which happened right before 9/11.
Since 9/11, it just feels as if we've all stepped on this giant banana peel, and we have gone from one war to two wars and tense elections, catastrophic weather news, including in your neck of the woods, first and foremost. And just it feels like the terra is not so firma. And, you know, for a while, in the several years after 9/11, we were not taking vacations. We were working around the clock. Well, it's sort of we sort of raised a bar and raised a standard and raised an intensity that we haven't really felt we can lower. I want to say, too, that one of the things we like to do on the show is offset that. And we always round out the show, maybe because we need it. You know, we need to soothe the savage beast of the news with spending some time on the arts. Chris Thiele, you know, on the mandolin, or Richard Ford, the novelist. Something in arts or culture that makes us remember why we care so darn much about this planet and what happens to it.
Robin Young and Here and Now join the 89.9 WWNO lineup weekdays noon to 1 starting July 23rd. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
And here on All Things New Orleans this evening, I want to stay for a while on the matter of media. On the subject of media, of course, there was a surge of public grief when the Times-Picayune announced it was cutting 200 staff members and ceasing daily publication this fall. All Things New Orleans examined the story a couple of weeks ago. You may have heard it from several individual perspectives, but few were as close to the subject as local reporter Bruce Nolan. In a recent interview with American Public Media's The Story, Nolan intimately recounted the intense relationship between the people of this city and their newspaper.
What have people been saying to you since they heard that the distribution of the paper is going to be cut in half and so many reporters, including yourself, are going to be let go? What have people been saying to you in New Orleans?
There's a lot of public grief. I think that's the right word. People are shocked. They're dismayed. They're grieving. They grieve for me. They grieve for my colleagues, and they grieve for the community. They don't know. They don't know what they're going to do without a paper 7 days a week. And I really think that that's peculiar to New Orleans. This is happening at four newspapers simultaneously, three in Alabama, one in New Orleans. Three of the four largest newspapers in Alabama are going through exactly this thing with us at the same time. Newspapers in Huntsville, Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, and Birmingham. And there's very little public pushback in Alabama. There is enormous public pushback in New Orleans.
Can you explain that to me?
It's because, first, there is this extraordinary relationship between the Times-Picayune and its readers, born out of Katrina. Secondly, it's because New Orleans, and bear with me for a couple of seconds while I do this,
sure,
because people are going to roll their eyes. Everybody thinks that where he lives is a special place and not like any place else. But I'm here to tell you that New Orleans is a special place, not like any place else, and I'm going to explain to you why. Our roots are different. We're European. We're colonial. We're African. We're Caribbean. We're not English, Scotch-Irish like the, you know. We're Vietnamese, German, Sicilian. And we have our own traditions, we have our own calendar, we have our own seasonal rhythms. Lord knows we have our own cuisine. We are passionate about the way we live, And the Times-Picayune, certainly for the last 15 years, absolutely got that. And it was able to reflect back to the city what it meant to live life as a New Orleanian and not a resident of Houston or Las Vegas or Jackson, Mississippi, which indeed does feel different. And the newspaper was able to reflect what it is to live in New Orleans as a New Orleanian in ways that people found authentic. And they're very upset at the notion that that is going to be interrupted.
And to go to three papers a week, is that the end of that, or is it just like a deep wound?
Well, this is an extraordinary experiment. This is an extraordinary reinvention of a dying business model. And everyone hopes, obviously, that we can hold it at that. But you know, this is a breathtaking experiment. So we'll just have to see.
And what's next for you? Have you thought about that?
I'm blessed. I'm the luckiest guy in the newsroom. I'm just a few weeks when I retire on September 30th. That will be the end of the line for me. I'll be just a few weeks shy of 65. I'll be able to retire just a little bit earlier than I had anticipated, and I'll be free to reinvent myself, but I'll be free at my leisure to do that. I'm not like so many of my colleagues who will have to find something else to do under difficult circumstances. And it must be said, though, in fairness requires this, that the severance packages turn out to be rather more generous than the industry severance packages as a whole in this kind of situation. And so I do acknowledge that, and I tip my hat to the owners for being generous in that way.
Bruce Nolan joined me from the public radio studios of WWNO in New Orleans.
That was the Times-Picayune's Bruce Nolan speaking to The Story's Dick Gordon. The Story, by the way, airs Monday through Thursday on WWNO2 at 11 p.m. And tomorrow is the day when Times-Picayune reporters who were offered jobs in the new organization have to decide whether to accept those positions or decline them and take their severance package that Bruce discussed. I'm Jack Hopke. It's All Things New Orleans from 89.9 WWNO. On a lighter note now, New Orleanians and others have certainly noticed the bead dog sculptures that have been placed around town by the LA SPCA. Paws on Parade, as it's called, has worked with the region's artistic community to help raise awareness for animal welfare. The response has been enthusiastic. So in honor of the 60th bead dog sculpture going up, Sharon Litwin spoke with the artist responsible for this anthropomorphic pup.
Be really corny and say the city has gone to the dogs, or worse. Observe that the placement of a collection of colorful canines around town is a doggone unusual idea. Now, I wouldn't say that, not me. But since I brought it up, let's parley about the pooches, since there does seem to be a proliferation of pups all over New Orleans. Every day that passes, I swear a new one pops up. While their shapes are clearly identical, each of the four-legged critters on our streets sports a unique kind of painted finish. That's because a whole series of artists and sculptors have put their playful palettes on their chosen Mardi Gras bead dog. And you have to admit, they do make you smile. They make the artist smile, too.
I do the dog because it's fun. It's fun, and children can approach it. Adults can approach it. It speaks to a broad audience. There's a component of laughter to it, that it's standing up. It mirrors ourselves. It sort of looks like a person, and it's standing up. It has beads in its mouth. It's got beads on its arms. And hopefully when people see it and they could say, wow, this kind of looks like me.
That's Norhan Gokturk, who decided he wanted to participate in the Louisiana SPCA's Paws on Parade public art project to raise awareness for animal welfare. an urban designer with a master's degree from Harvard and an architect's degree from the Pratt Institute, Norhan developed the first New Orleans-style modular home designed to be placed on blighted and abandoned properties. And he did it way before Katrina. For this project, Norhan, working with artist colleague Steve Ulness, applied his architectural skills to the creation of what some might describe as a modular mutt.
We actually cut it up. We cut the legs and we cut the tail, and we rejigged it so that it could stand up on its hind legs. The tail could look like it's wagging. The arms could look like that it's in a parade-like position next to a float. And the dog has beads in its mouth, as if a person threw beads at the dog. And so we titled the dog, "Throw Me Something, Mister."
And maybe for many an artist that would be enough, but not for Norhan. He has an extra dimension.
The dog is painted with two types of paint. One is an iridescent paint and one is an interference paint. And they're both very special types of paint. So when you look at the paint, the dog will change colors at different angles. And that's the iridescent paint. So obviously the three colors are purple, green, and gold. But what I wanted to do was be able to increase the color spectrum, the way color travels between two points of the spectrum. And that's the iridescent paint. And then there's interference paint on top of that. There's 61 words and phrases on this dog. So Le Bon Temps Brûlé, that would be one. And those words are on interference paint, which is titanium-coated mica flakes. So depending on different angles, you'll see it in different colors as you travel or look around the dog. But at distances, you won't see that paint. And you won't see those words. So as you approach the dog, you will be rewarded by seeing these words.
So here's a thought for a summer activity when the kids are driving you crazy or you've got guests in town and you need to show them around. Right after the 4th of July, the 6th in fact, you'll be able to take them over to Lafayette Square, each with a pen and a pad in hand. Get them to write all 61 words and phrases down. It will take a while. Tell them the first one to finish picks the ice cream store or snowball stand of their choice. I know it's stretching the keep them occupied routine to the hilt, but let's face it, it may be the best we can do in the dog days of summer. For more information about the SPCA's Paws on Parade project and the Throw Me Something, Mr. Dog installation, go to wwno.org or nolavie, N-O-L-A-V-I-E, .com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Lipman.
Have fun here on our program, which is called All Things New Orleans. Thank you, Sharon. That closes this evening's edition of the program. I'm Jack Hopke, and I work with WWNO's Thomas Walsh to put this show together for you. Each week, all of our programs are archived at WWNO.org, and we are back live 7 days from now, and sincerely hope to see you then.